Politico Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
Eco Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana,
and financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to Eco Report. For WFHB, I'm Patrick Callanan.
And I'm Sarah Callanan. Today in our feature, Enrique Sanz from the Indiana Environmental Reporter talks about sulfur dioxide emissions in Porter County. This is part one of a two-part feature.
That's coming up later in the program, but first your environmental headlines.
According to Inside Indiana Business, the parent company of Indianapolis Power and Light Company has gotten into the electric vehicle industry, including the launch of an EV subscription service in Marion County. Virginia-based AES Corp., through its subsidiary Motor, has launched a monthly full-service electric car program called Motor Drive. The company says the service was established to get drivers comfortable with operating electric cars without having to make long-term commitments. Quote, "Already a provider of electricity, AES saw Motor Drive as an opportunity to accelerate adoption of electric cars out on the road today, and we see an important role for utilities in this conversation," end quote, said Mike Bark, head of strategy and business development at Motor Drive. Motor Drive members can sign up for a monthly plan or a longer-term subscription. The company says there are three subscription tiers with monthly plans beginning at $649 per month. The plan includes insurance, routine maintenance, and access to several charging options. Quote, "Our goal is for people to experience the superior performance of electric cars without the commitment of a purchase or lease," end quote. Bark says Marion County is the first location in the country to offer Motor Drive. He says the EV subscription program is a natural fit for the company. The program offers a variety of models, including Nissan Leaf, Chevrolet Bolt, Tesla Model 3, Audi e-tron, and Tesla Model X.
A proposed solar project in Pulaski County has just been approved. The clean energy project, to be known as Mammoth Solar, will be designed to produce 1,000 megawatts of electricity and involve an estimated investment in the $1 billion range, reports Nathan Origer of the Pulaski County Community Development Commission. The Midwest Mammoth Solar Project will include acreage in both Pulaski and Stark counties. Local officials have been told that in Pulaski County, the land may total as much as 4,500 acres. Origer said the solar panel acreage will roughly follow the large electric transmission lines that cross the county. Unlike the windmill electric project, which the county rejected a couple of years ago, proposed to be built on some of the county's prime agriculture land, the solar project will largely cross the county's sandy, less productive soils. Hoover reports the electrical panels will not be much taller than a mature cornfield. Electricity produced by the solar panels will connect to the transmission power lines. Thus, Origer notes, there are only a few places to locate such a project for access to the grid. He also noted the power produced may not necessarily be purchased by the area utility. It may be purchased by a regional power provider. Origer said there are multiple layers in the distribution market.
The Courier and Press of Evansville reported on a solar issue this month. A state consumer advocate office is recommending Indiana regulators deny a request by Vectren, a CenterPoint energy company, to compensate customers less for the extra energy they send back to the power grid. Currently, customers are financially credited at retail rates for the extra electricity they send back to the power grid. This arrangement to credit customers is called net metering. It will be phased out beginning in 2022 under an Indiana law signed by Governor Eric Holcomb 3 years ago. Vectren is seeking to end it earlier following guidelines in that same law. Quote, "We are simply aligning our rate with the intent of the policy passed by the General Assembly," end quote, said Natalie Head, a company spokeswoman.
A black bear has been sighted near Clark County, Indiana, according to an Indiana Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, Facebook post. Confirmation was provided by the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife. In the post, DNR non-game mammalogist Brad Westrich said the sighting should not cause alarm, but residents should prepare in order to avoid negative interactions with the bear. The DNR urged citizens not to feed bears, intentionally or accidentally. Quote, "Unfortunately, a fed bear often becomes a dead bear," end quote, the DNR said in an online description of the sighting.
The Trump administration has launched another attack on endangered species, but from a different angle. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed limiting protections to the places where endangered species currently live. That means that areas that could be restored to support endangered species would no longer be protected. Many endangered species have lost habitat to the climate crisis and land degradation. That's why it's important to protect land that could be restored to support vulnerable wildlife. Under the Wildlife Service's plan, one of the endangered species that could lose habitat protections is the eastern black rail, a small marsh bird that is going to have its habitat submerged by the rising Atlantic Ocean because of the climate crisis. As the rail is forced to move inland, it might be without a protected home because the proposed plan would restrict the Wildlife Service from protecting the habitat the rail doesn't currently use. If the plan is finalized, it could result in the loss of many endangered animals. The Wildlife Service is accepting public input on the plan for a short time and is legally obligated to review and take into account public comments when making its final decision.
The state of Michigan is going to pay $600 million in settlements to victims of the lead poisoning of Flint's water. The funds will be given to residents and businesses affected by the crisis through direct payments from a court-monitored compensation fund. Nearly 80% of the money will go to children younger than 18. The settlement comes over 6 years after the crisis began. In 2014, city officials switched the city's water supply to the Flint River, which caused corrosion in the water pipes and leached lead into the water supply. The switch was supposed to be a cost-cutting measure. It took the city and state over a year to declare a state of emergency and begin giving residents free bottled water. Flint is a predominantly black, low-income community of about 100,000 people, and the children there are already at a disadvantage. Lead can lead to developmental problems and delayed puberty. Some studies have linked lead exposure to violent crime, probably because of the mental impact lead has on people. As the environmental news website Earther put it, quote, "All of this is a symptom of systemic racism, which has left poor communities of color with insufficient resources after years of government negligence. The water crisis could set these kids back even further, showing the compounding nature of environmental racism," end quote.
The Midwest has hundreds of brownfields. This story is about one such site in Kokomo. The brownfield there has taken many years to develop into a space that is now contributing to life in the city. The latest addition is solar panels. Innovatus Solar, a solar energy provider based in South Bend, Indiana, helped redevelop a site in Kokomo, Indiana, that for years housed a manufacturing plant operated by Continental Steel Corp. The Kokomo Solar One Array is located on land where a Continental facility produced nails, rods, wire, and fencing from scrap steel, operating through the Great Depression and providing materials for the military during World War II. The steel plant operated for nearly 70 years. It was, for a time, the largest employer in Kokomo. Continental, after years of struggles, closed the plant in 1986, leaving behind a contaminated site that also impacted the area's surface water and groundwater, polluted a stream, and left lead in the yards of nearby residents. In 1989, the EPA listed the site on the Superfund program's National Priorities List. Years of cleanup have turned the location into a showcase of community pride. The site includes soccer fields as part of a recreational complex, clean creeks for fishing, kayaking, and canoeing, a stormwater retention pond, wind turbines, landscaping, and road infrastructure improvements. It also features a solar array that provides power for the city's residents and revenue for the city's coffers. Kokomo Solar One came online in December 2016 and provides a model for how brownfield sites can be reinvented. Kokomo Solar One is sited on about 26 acres southwest of downtown Kokomo. The project includes 21,000 solar panels. According to a city official, quote, "For the surrounding area, it meant repurposing and revitalizing valuable land that had been an eyesore and underutilized for decades. The city took advantage of existing infrastructure, helped transition their power generation to renewable energy, and taxpayers will benefit by receiving $36,000 a year for leasing the site for the solar project," end quote.
The National Black Farmers Association, which represents 109,000 black farmers in 42 states, recently filed a federal lawsuit to stop agribusiness giant Monsanto and its parent company Bayer from selling the herbicide Roundup. The suit alleges that black farmers around the nation have been forced to use Roundup-resistant genetically engineered seeds and Roundup itself increasingly heavily, and that the company failed to notify the farmers of the herbicide's risks. One of the attorneys who filed the suit says the problem can be solved only if the product is removed from the market. In June, Bayer consented to pay over $10 million to settle tens of thousands of claims that Roundup causes cancer, but wouldn't agree to stop marketing the herbicide or to add warning labels. The co-counsel for the lawsuits said there are at least 25,000 alleged cancer victims who haven't settled with Bayer, and that some of them are members of the National Black Farmers Association involved in the suit. The suit alleges that thousands of black farmers have used Roundup for many years, and that some have sustained injuries from the product, whereas others believe they are currently developing cancer. The suit alleges that Monsanto has gradually displaced conventional seeds on shelves in local seed stores, nearly requiring farmers to use its seeds genetically engineered to resist Roundup. The suit also alleges that black farmers are disproportionately impacted by the risks of Roundup use because of the long-documented racist disparities in black farmers' literacy and education rates. They have been especially harmed by the absence of a clear warning on Roundup containers.
Environmental regulators across the country granted more than 3,000 requests from polluting oil and gas operations, government facilities, chemical plants, and other facilities to stop pollution monitoring and other procedures intended to protect human health and the environment, an expansive 2-month Associated Press investigation revealed. The Trump administration, under pressure from the oil and gas industry, allowed the exemptions in late March because of the coronavirus pandemic. While EPA claims the monitoring waivers do not constitute a license to pollute at will, independent measurements make it clear that higher pollution is the result. The investigation's findings run counter to statements made by the EPA in June that the coronavirus was not impacting compliance and monitoring, and that the industry was not seeking relief. In fact, the industry actors aggressively sought and were granted exemptions as early as March to skip inspections of smokestacks, tank seals, flare stacks, and emissions monitoring systems, which could raise the risk of explosions. Quote, As surely as night follows day, there are going to be an increased number of deaths from those causes, end quote, said Philip Landrigan, director of the Program for Global Public Health and the Common Good at Boston College.
The Trump administration released a proposed rule allowing oil and gas drilling on millions of acres of protected national forests, the Houston Chronicle reported. The new rule would allow drilling without public review or environmental reviews that could analyze the impact of industrial actions. Quote, by undermining the public participation and environmental review required by the National Environmental Policy Act, this proposed rule puts the interests of the fossil fuel industry ahead of the public interest, end quote, Will Fadeli, a senior government relations representative for the Wilderness Society, said in a statement. So far, the U.S. Forest Service allows drilling and exploration in roughly one-third of its protected forests, or about 3% of its lands. Now, a new analysis from the Wilderness Society finds that the proposed rule will transfer control of the lands from the Forest Service to the Bureau of Land Management, which will then open up drilling on millions of acres in Colorado, Montana, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, and Wyoming. Although the rule mostly targets forests in the West, the proposed rule would also affect national forests on the East Coast. This means more forests will share the fate of Allegheny National Forest, now home to thousands of abandoned oil and gas wells, which taxpayers must pay to clean up, the National Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, reported. The NRDC took exception to how the proposed rule will allow drilling near the lands of indigenous people. The NRDC noted that despite industrialization and relocation policies, indigenous people have been stewards of the land and a model of the economic and emotional benefits that healthy forests provide. Quote, tens of millions of Americans hike, camp, fish, hunt, bike and run in our national forests each year, end quote. Sharon Bucino, Senior Director of Lands for the Nature Program at NRDC, said in a statement, quote, this rule would sideline our voices in favor of the fossil fuel industry. We won't allow the Trump administration to shut down public review of drilling in our national forests that the American people don't want and that the climate can't afford, end quote. And now for our feature, we will hear Enrique Sands from the Indiana Environmental Reporter talk about sulfur dioxide emissions in Porter County. This is part one of a two-part feature.
The EPA says it intends to officially determine that Porter County has met the federal standards for sulfur dioxide air emissions. Sulfur dioxide can harm the human respiratory system and make breathing difficult. It can also harm trees and plants by damaging foliage and decreasing growth. Sulfur dioxide is regulated by the EPA, and states have to ensure those regulations are being met. The EPA said it will designate Porter County as being in attainment of the 2010 National Ambient Air Quality Standard for sulfur dioxide after air monitor readings in the area near the ArcelorMittal Burns Harbor steel mill met air quality standards between 2017 and 2019. Kurt Thiede, EPA's Region 5 Administrator, thanked the state of Indiana for its efforts to keep Indiana's air clean and said it looks forward to continued dialogue to complete area designations and implement the 2010 sulfur dioxide standard. The designation means the county's sulfur dioxide levels are cleaner than the national standard, exempting the state and pollution sources in the area from additional monitoring and reporting requirements. The agency's decision is a result of a recommendation sent to the EPA in April by Indiana Department of Environmental Management Commissioner Bruno Pigott. IDEM reported that monitoring data collected at ArcelorMittal Burns Harbor and at the town of Dune Acres between 2017 and 2019 reported yearly sulfur dioxide values below the federal 75 parts per billion sulfur dioxide standard. IDEM told the EPA that the recommendation is supported by a thorough analysis of certified sulfur dioxide data. Before the designation for Porter County and 44 other areas from across the U.S. are finalized by the EPA, states and the public will have until September 21st to submit comments about the decision to the agency. Federal regulations and state enforcement of those regulations have helped limit the amount of sulfur dioxide pollution from Porter County for decades. The Clean Air Act of 1970 allowed the federal government to establish national standards for air pollutants and direct states to establish state implementation plans that tells the EPA what the state, territory, or local air district plans to do to meet those standards. The EPA approved the first sulfur dioxide state implementation plan for Dearborn, Gibson, Lake, and Porter counties back in 1988. The plan, like all approved state implementation plans, was codified into Indiana state law. It placed limitations on the county's major source for sulfur dioxide emissions. In Porter County, the major source for sulfur dioxide emissions is a steel mill now owned by ArcelorMittal Burns Harbor LLC. The facility had to switch some boilers and furnaces to burn only natural gas. The state also placed hourly sulfur dioxide emission limitations and operation limitations on facilities crucial to steel mill operations, like its sinter plant, blast furnace stoves, coke batteries, and slab mill soaking pits. Since then, the facility has only been formally cited for sulfur dioxide plan violations in 1999 and 2005, but the company has fought to weaken the regulation. ArcelorMittal spent $3,700 in political contributions during 2008 and 2009, including $1,000 to Governor Mitch Daniels' re-election campaign and another $1,350 going to Environmental Affairs Committee members in the Indiana House and Senate. The following year, the state of Indiana amended its state implementation plan for sulfur dioxide in Porter County. It would remove the sulfur dioxide emission limit for ArcelorMittal Burns Harbor's blast furnace flare and submitted it to the EPA for final approval. Thomas Easterly, who was then commissioner of IDEM, wrote to the EPA saying that the emission limit for the blast furnace gas flare is redundant and unnecessary. Its removal, he said, would not result in or allow an increase in actual sulfur dioxide emissions. In 2014, the EPA formally rejected the state's revision, saying it would violate portions of the Clean Air Act. The EPA said that removing the flare limit eliminates the only requirement which directly addresses the sulfur content of the blast furnace gas, which ArcelorMittal uses to fuel other combustion units in the facility. In a response to the company, the EPA wrote, quote, "Although blast furnace gas is considered to be a low sulfur fuel, the state submittal indicates that the sulfur content of blast furnace gas can vary, and the proposed state implementation plan revision would allow ArcelorMittal's blast furnace gas to increase in sulfur content without limit. This would be inconsistent with the state's prior attainment demonstration for the sulfur dioxide standard." ArcelorMittal sued for a review of the EPA's decision. The state of Indiana joined the company in a suit a month later. More than 5 years later, in 2019, the company, the state, and the federal government settled the suit. The state would not be allowed to remove the blast furnace flare limit. Instead, the settlement would allow ArcelorMittal to emit 7 times the amount of sulfur dioxide previously allowed. In exchange, the federal government required a 90% drop in sulfur dioxide emissions limits for several minor furnaces and boilers, and a 15% emission limit reduction in power station boilers number 8 through 12. It's unclear how the settlement will affect sulfur dioxide levels in Porter County and beyond. Earlier this year, ArcelorMittal also settled a lawsuit filed by the federal government and the states of Indiana and Ohio over multiple alleged violations of the Clean Air Act at several facilities, including at Burns Harbor. Some of the charges include excess visible emissions from the sinter plant windbox gas recirculation system and coke battery underfires, which are regulated by the state's sulfur dioxide plan. The company agreed to pay a civil penalty of $5 million, including more than $2 million paid to the state of Indiana. And it also agreed to adopt a series of controls and programs to get the facilities involved in a settlement back within Clean Air Act requirements.
For EcoReport, I'm Sarah Callanan.
And I'm Patrick Callanan. Support for EcoReport comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, Bloomington's locally grown co-op grocery since 1976, offering products with a focus on local, fair trade, natural, and organic, with support for farmers, producers, agencies, and artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on East 3rd Street near College Mall, West 6th Street near the Courthouse Square, and Shreve Hall on the Ivy Tech campus.
Are you looking for a way to make a difference on environmental issues? Here at EcoReport, we are currently looking for reporters and segment producers. Our goal is to report facts on how we're all affected by global climate disruption and the ongoing assaults on our air, land, and water. We also celebrate ecologists, tree huggers, soil builders, and an assortment of champions who actively protect and restore our natural world, particularly those who are active in South Central Indiana. All levels of experience and all ages are welcome, and we provide the training you'll need. WFHB also offers internships.
To volunteer for Eco Report, give us a call at 812-323-1200 or email us at earth@wfhb.org. And now for our events calendar. Participate in a shorebird hike at Goose Pond Fish and Wildlife Area on Saturday, September 5th from 9 to 11 a.m. Meet at the Visitor Center to learn the basics of how to identify native shorebirds and their importance. Bring water and wear suitable clothing and shoes for walking outdoors. Masks are required for this event. Registration is also required. Go to the INDNR website to register.
A Donaldson Cave hike is scheduled at Spring Mill State Park on Monday, September 7th from 11 to 11:40 a.m. Learn why the cave and old-growth forest are named after Donaldson while hiking down to one of the most scenic views in the park. Meet at the Donaldson parking lot for a rugged 40-minute hike.
A full harvest moon hike will take place at Spring Mill State Park on Friday, September 4th from 9 to 11 p.m. Meet at the Spring Mill Inn for a 2.5-mile hike on Trail 3, where you will learn history and folklore about the harvest moon.
How many of you out there enjoy the TV show Survivor? Now you have an opportunity to compete in a Survivor Challenge at Brown County State Park on Sunday, September 6th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Teams must have 5 members, one of which must be 10 years old or younger. Each member will compete in one timed event. Whichever team completes all 5 challenges in the shortest amount of time wins. Sign up the morning of the event. Competition begins at 1 p.m.
Citizens Climate Lobby is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, grassroots advocacy organization focused on national policies to address climate change. Susie Smith, who runs the local chapter's Facebook page, is encouraging others to become involved. Go to citizensclimatelobby.org to learn more and to join the monthly meetings. And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's headlines were written by Norm Holley and Linda Green. Today's feature was produced by IER reporter Enrique Sands. David Lyman wrote the script, and Linda Green and Patrick Callanan edited it. Juliana Daly compiled the events. Patrick Callanan produced and engineered today's show.
For WFHB, I'm Patrick Callanan.
And I'm Sarah Callanan.
And this is Eco Report.